A summer hike up to a 13,000-foot alpine meadow can be exhilarating. But what if you decided to live at that altitude for the rest of your life? Lower oxygen levels, frigid temperatures, and sparse vegetation would make it tough. Archaeologists know hunter-gatherers traversed highland areas thousands of years ago, but presumed they also had to spend time in lowland areas in order to survive. But now that idea is being challenged by a team of researchers at the University of Wyoming. Wyoming Public Radio's Tennessee Watson reports.
Archaeologist Randy Haas routinely travels to the Andean Plateau in Peru, and as soon as he arrives, he's reminded why some of his colleagues are reluctant to believe his hypothesis that hunter-gatherers lived here at high altitudes year-round.
I've seen people get off the plane in Juliaca and just fall over, and people will rush out with oxygen tanks because of the lack of oxygen.
Not to mention, it's cold.
If you don't have fancy down jackets and sleeping bags, it's very difficult to keep warm. There are not a lot of trees up there, not a lot of fuel to burn at this high elevation.
Haas says the harsh environs make it tough to grow food. All these things combined make it a challenging place to live, which explains why this high elevation region was one of the last frontiers for human settlement.
And for a lot of scholars, it was believed that it wasn't really until you had food production that's what made permanent habitation of these landscapes possible.
We know that between 3,000 and 5,000 years ago, agricultural communities emerged in the alpine valleys of the Andes. The descendants of these early farmers still successfully work the land today. If you've ever eaten quinoa, it was likely grown in this region of Peru. But few people had studied the hunter-gatherers who lived here. Haas saw an opportunity to help fill a gap in the historical understanding of how humans came to settle at high elevations.
And this one particular site, Soto-Macayapata, we knew about from surface remains, scatters of flake stone tools on the surface.
That was a pretty good indicator that evidence of hunter-gatherers might be buried underground at Soro too. But first, he had to meet with the local community to get their blessing to dig right in the middle of their barley field.
What I'd hoped to find at the time were just maybe some house features, hearths. But what I didn't expect to find and what we ended up coming across was a burial assemblage, 16 human individuals in burial pits.
He knew he'd hit the jackpot, but he was nervous. Nervous how the local community would respond to the disturbance of their ancient ancestors' remains. But he says they too were intrigued by the discovery and encouraged him to proceed.
And you can see each one of these bags have different labels on them.
Haas handles fragments of 7,000-year-old bones that now sit on his desk at the University of Wyoming, where he's wrapping up a year-long fellowship. When he first arrived, he shared his find with his colleague Melissa Murphy, an anthropologist who also studies human evolution in the highlands of Peru. And she immediately knew Haas was going to make an important contribution to the understanding of the occupation of the Andes.
Hunter-gatherers and foragers, they don't bury their dead in cemeteries. There's not going to be large sample sizes.
Since hunter-gatherers were mobile, they didn't build large structures or accumulate stuff, which means they left behind fewer clues. So to find a body, let alone 16, is a big deal.
Because there are important transitions that we move from being a hunter-gatherer forager to being a settled pastoralist or a settled agriculturalist. And what happens? How does that come about? And when do humans occupy these higher elevations?
Haas's discovery offered a solid answer to Murphy's questions for several reasons.
If this was a temporary camp monitored from a low elevation base camp, then the old and infirm wouldn't have been coming along. Young children probably would have been left behind. And it turns out that our burial assemblage has two children who are somewhere between ages 4 to 6 years old. We have at least one man who's over 50. We have men and women. And so this was another line of evidence that seemed to suggest that there was a whole population living up here long term.
And the chemical makeup of the bones has a story to tell, too. Haas got help from some graduate students who tested the isotopes in the bones. Signature ratios of carbon, nitrogen, and oxygen revealed the altitude where the water and food these folks consumed was sourced.
It was really amazing to see that they fell into the high altitude precipitation values for oxygen. And I was like, these people live there.
Ioana Stefanescu, one of the graduate students, was the first person to see the results.
I remember I put my laptop in my purse and I was like running. I couldn't wait to tell them.
This groundbreaking discovery earned Haas and his team a place in the July issue of Royal Society Open Science, a journal that requires an arduous review of an article before it's published. Haas's next big question is, how did the Peruvian hunter-gatherers do it? He says there's already an important clue. All of the bodies exhibited evidence of cranial modification, or head shaping. Haas believes the group strapped boards to their babies' heads to shape their skulls as a way of showing a cultural connection.
It's telling us something more about the importance of community in not only surviving, but thriving in adverse conditions.
Haas will join the archaeology department at the University of California, Davis this fall, where he plans to pursue his research. For Here and Now, I'm Tennessee Watson.